Welcome back to Creative Therapy Umbrella. I'm going to keep today's intro incredibly short and sweet because I'm on the verge of losing my voice. Today's episode features Jasmine Matthew, and she is a certified therapeutic recreation specialist, aka recreation therapist. She has a huge passion for dance and goes into so many different cool adaptations that she uses for her students, and she just has the warmest heart, and I had so much fun talking with her and really hope that I get to talk with her again. So if you want to hear some really cool adaptations for dance, for recreation therapy in general, in a variety of populations, take a listen to this episode and enjoy. All right, Jasmine, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm very excited about our chat today.
So am I.
Excellent. Good. Well, can you tell our listeners a little bit about what you currently do?
I am a recreational therapist, and I also own and run a adaptive dance company called Jasmine's Beat.
Awesome. And so you have your own company. Can you tell us a little bit about that, about Jasmine's Beat?
Sure. I have always had a passion for dance, but I did go to college for recreational therapy, and I wanted to tie the two in together over the years, and I finally got my chance, and I just went with it. So it's basically a fusion dance class that I offer. So it's all different varieties of dance, and I'll even have some guest teachers come in, and since I have the therapy background, I can help adapt the dance movements, techniques, any sensory issues, things like that. And we offer it for all ages, all abilities, all disabilities. And we're fueled by volunteers that help on a regular basis. I contract out to local dance studios and also North Texas Performing Arts, which is children's and teen theater. So,
cool. Yeah. That's got a lot of arms in a lot of different places.
Yes. And actually, I should mention that I just signed up to do a program with the Dallas VA as well.
Wow. Another population. Yes. Another arm into the community. That's awesome. Did it, when you started Jasmine's Beat, did it originally start as something smaller and then it just kept expanding? Or how did that growth occur?
Yeah. I actually am originally from Philadelphia, and I moved to New York, and I attempted to start it in New York, and it didn't move. So 5 years ago when I moved to Texas, my three kids take dance, and I just kept trying to push for this idea, and then somebody took on to it, and we started it out as a adaptive fusion class once a week during the weekend when it's quietest in the studios. And, you know, we offered it for free at first and then gradually picked up, and now it's just a regular class over there that is offered, and there's more requests for it. So
cool. So like there sounds like there's been some advocacy along with it that has grown, kind of getting the word out there.
Yes. And I think a huge part is that somebody knows somebody else who has a special need and would love to try this out or participate in it. So, and I think there's a bigger need in North Texas, just a quick area.
Yeah. And that networking is so amazing. How I think everybody says with like a business, it's the word of mouth is the most powerful way to get people.
Moms, especially moms and dads, they are, especially with today's day and age with social media and all the Facebook groups and the, you know, the support groups or the moms groups, they all have that word of mouth goes far now.
Yeah. Yes. And I feel like that always would happen. I used to run a mom's group for a music group. And in that group, you could hear it happening where they'd be like, "Did you hear about this new breastfeeding cafe? You have to go there. You have to go there. And this new thing." And it's so cool to hear and watch that happen too, how people just connect with each other like that.
Yes, it's so awesome.
Yeah, for sure. So you said you offer a lot of different types of dance. Can you tell us a little bit about the kinds of dance that you offer?
Sure. My background is actually in Bollywood and Bharatanatyam, which is a type of classical Indian dance. When I moved to Texas, I also used to work for a company that taught dance and gymnastics at local preschools. And so they trained me in the in introductory ballet and introductory jazz classes, which is really the foundation of all those dance classes. So I use that towards these classes, because more often than not, the basics are what we really need to teach anyway. And then every now and then I'll have guest teachers that I know have their expertise in ballroom dancing or Broadway, things like that, and they'll come in and it'll be a nice treat for the students.
Totally. Yes, that is awesome to have so many different types of dance under one
Yes.
place. That's so cool. Do you find that like certain students kind of that they go to one place or that they or do they usually like trying all different types of dance or do they want to kind of try one type of dance?
I think they're open to a lot, but this particular population thrives on routine. So if I started up something, and most of the time, like a guest teacher comes in and it goes well, but there may be one or two students where they're like, I'm not participating in this. This isn't what we usually do. So I'm just going to sit here and watch until we do stretches.
I'm out of my comfort zone right now, so I need to watch. That's awesome. So what kind of things, what does that adaptation piece look like for you on most days?
It's different and depends. It's very person specific. And this is where my recreation therapy background comes in handy. And we have had also some classes where it's been open to the public. So I just have to adapt on the spur of the moment. Some might have a mobility device. So we would just do upper body movements and practice balance with the device. Or if there, it depends on what goals they're working on. And a lot of times their parents will tell me ahead of time, "Hey, by the way, we're working on this," or "This is what works best with this person." I can tell you, I had a client who has a deficit in attention, but if the second I tell him to count to the beats with the claps, all of a sudden his attention span is back in place again.
Whoa.
Or recently somebody, I had someone come in and try out a class, and it was just totally new for this student. So, I didn't expect a whole lot, but he was like, he was making a lot of noises. He's running around, and he went over and started like opening his mouth and trying to put his mouth on different things. So I started saying, "Hey, let's sing along. Let's make fishy noises so that create a distraction with his mouth, and then he's actually paying attention, but in his own way. He might not be dancing, but he's starting to pay attention more and more that way." So.
Totally, yeah, engaged in some way, especially for a first class. That's awesome.
Yeah. Something else I've done is for it, I have clients that are visually impaired, and I have had a star sticker that's it right it's right it ra it's raised up from the floor, and so they can feel where it is with their feet, so they know they're in the proper place for the dance. So they're, and they're such good dancers. It's amazing how well they do. So it's just, they just weren't given the opportunity yet.
Yes, that those adaptations can just create that space of knowing in their environment like that. Wow, I love all of those stories so much. I'm fascinated by all of them too. Those little, sometimes those ideas, those out of the box thoughts that all of a sudden click and register, and then you've got somebody in with what you're doing. It's amazing.
It's amazing, and it's also like, you know, humbling, because just because it wasn't tried yet, that's the reasoning that I keep doing this, because I want to see what else I can offer, and I wish I could clone myself to do more.
Right?
And you know, last year the class that I do on a regular basis at a studio called Next Step Dance, they had their very first recital on stage. And we had them, I mean, this studio is huge. So they have like 35 performances per show. And they have 3 shows in 1 weekend. It's a lot.
Oh my
but
gosh.
We made sure that they were in the very beginning of the show so that they can come on and come off, and they don't have to wait through, parents don't have to wait through, like, there's no sensory issues with waiting. And then we made sure to practice with the lights on, with the music, with the volume, and with feeling the texture of the floor. So they're completely used to it. And it's funny because during the dress rehearsal, they did awesome. We took video. We were so proud of them. Parents were in tears because of happiness. And, yes. And then during the recital, they started out so great. And then the little girl's ballet shoes were untied. And even though it doesn't affect, you know, her tripping or anything, it's just the fact that it was undone. And she froze. And she wanted, so one of us came up and fixed it. And the second we fixed it, she was back again. But that was like a huge, you know, it's a sensory need for her to everything to be perfect.
Yes.
For her. So yeah.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that I missed that.
Well, it's like one of those things where, and I don't have a lot of experience doing like adapted performances. I had some in my previous job, but like there's those things that you can prepare for, like the lights, the feeling of the floor, but it's like, who would have known that a shoe is going to be untied, or like a leotard strap moves, or something, you know, hair falls down or something. There's so many unknowns. And then I would think that, you know, as a kid, it's like, what do I do? You know, like you're freezing in that moment of like, do I fix it myself? Do I ask for help? And
right?
Yeah.
And then in the opposite range, her partner on stage, doing somersaults on stage, has no stage, you know, fright or anything like that. And I'm like, this is like two opposite ends. They're all needing, you know, they all have special needs. So that was just amazing to me.
Yes. And it's those people, I love it with clients like that when they're actually near each other. It's like, you guys are, you know, you can rub off on each other a little, of like, you know, get having that flexibility of being with each other is actually a really great social experience too.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That I would imagine that has to keep you on your toes so much during a performance like that.
Oh yes. I'm just actually glad when they just are able to get on stage. Because sometimes even for neurotypical people, it's just, it can be nerve-wracking to be on stage in front of all those people. So it's, you know, I feel like doubly hard because they have to be extra aware of their surroundings and why they're up there and what they're doing. And, you know, if they have anxiety, how to calm themselves down without someone telling them when they're on stage. One of the reasons why I'm also thinking about anxiety is I helped out a group called My Possibilities. It's a pretty neat organization. It was founded by a mom of an adult with special needs who aged out of, you know, the system with schools, and it almost is set up like a college for adults with special needs, where they have their parents and them can pick out what classes they want to attend. And it could be computers, it could be music, it could be dance, it could be art. And they come in, they're either bussed in or dropped off, and they sign up for whatever amount of time they want to be there for. And they could have homework. The dance I helped out with, and they teamed up with North Texas Performing Arts, and that particular group joined North Texas Performing Arts when they were doing the Little Mermaid show. And they did some choreography on stage. And so one of them, she is an awesome dancer, to the point where she would sit in the corner of the room when I was teaching, observe, but always say, "No, I'm good. I'm not getting up." And she'd just act like she was too shy to get up. And then maybe next to the last class, she got up and she did everything as if she's been practicing with us, which was amazing to me. She was
Wow.
on point, like completely in sync with the rest of us. She knew exactly what was next. There was no hesitation. And then we got on stage and she just hid behind the curtain and did the steps behind the curtain. She refused to come out. It killed me.
You're like, you can do it. You can do it. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so deep down inside, like I know her mom knows, we all know what she's capable of. We just wanted to show it so badly, and but the ultimate goal was for her to get on stage, and she did, but in her own way. So that was an accomplishment.
Yes, I love that. And that framing of accomplishments in someone's own way. It's so cool to hear about that, of like that it was a success for her, and maybe she'll get there one day, but like it already was a success, which is so awesome. There was this one there's this one place I'd heard about that used to do a show specifically for kids who did have anxiety that didn't want to get up on stage, and they made it like a black light show. So you weren't able, they would wear like clothes that would shine in the black light, but you couldn't see who they were. But then they were
Oh, that's
getting up on,
neat.
yeah, it was such a cool idea. And I was like, wow, what a cool way to remove the anxiety if you don't want. And then some kids could just get up and do the regular show without the black light. And I was like, that is so another way of making it successful
Oh, now you're
for
giving
each.
me ideas. That's really neat.
I forget. I feel terrible. I can't remember who did it or where I heard it from. But yeah, it's a cool, like those different things of making it successful for somebody in their own way is just, it's the best.
Yes, it's very person specific.
Yes, for sure.
Another adaptation I can tell you that we do is with costume. We a lot of times just let them eat. For the theater one, we let the parents or them either make their costumes or just wear t-shirt and pants that are the same color as the costume, so they have comfort even with the texture of what they're wearing. I do the same thing with my dance class for the recital. I make sure it's like a cotton t-shirt, but it has something on it so that it seems more like a costume instead of just a t-shirt.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm curious too with like all of even the movement adaptations and where you are. Do you ever have and I guess this is kind of like the girl too who kind of wanted to be on the sidelines, but somebody who wants to participate, but they're more of like a behind the scenes kind of person, or they end up being a helper, but they want to kind of be a part of the group. Is there more clients like that that you have?
Oh, definitely. I think a lot of times they will say that they love the class. They will participate in the classes, but they will not participate in recital. Or that they will do just the stretching and maybe a little bit of movement and dance, but not the, like I will give during the actual dance class, some time to do freestyle or freeze dance or something fun, and they won't participate in that because that would mean that they would have to come out a little bit out of their own and you know, if you're quiet or more, you know, introverted, it's a little hard to come out of yourself once a week in that class.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. Do you have with your classes, do you see a lot of social connection that happens between the students that attend together?
Yes, the first thing that comes to my mind actually is the volunteers. A lot of times I have other theater students or dance students volunteering. And what I've noticed is the students will come in, and if the volunteer is out for the day, they'll be like, where are they? I don't understand. Where they should be with me. I can't do this without them. Like, you know, that bond has already been built since day one. They're just expecting them to be there. A lot of times the volunteers and the students, the volunteers are the ones who almost teach the students about personal space. And the one thing that I can help facilitate is, you know, social skills like greeting one another, making eye contact when you're speaking, turn-taking skills, and then frustration tolerance. You're not getting the song that you wanted, and that's okay. We're going to wait this song out, and then maybe we'll have time for yours. You know, that's a pretty typical one, actually.
Especially for any group.
Yes.
It's always, you gotta wait.
Yes.
Everybody's here.
Yes. Anxiety is a typical one. Having self-confidence, because it does take a lot to move in front of other people. Maybe it's somebody new that's in the class, that's in front of you now, and you're not sure if you can, you know, be bodily open like that. You know, you're moving and not in a way that you would normally do anywhere else.
Yeah, definitely. That it there's I would imagine so many benefits that come with besides I feel like this happens in music groups too, where it's like, yeah, we're coming together and we might be working on like communication skills or, you know, and the adapted piece of the instrument, but the social and bigger aspects are so many cool things that come out from just naturally spending time with so many people for a while.
Yes. They remember everything. They're like sponges. So if you misspoke something or you taught a choreography and you're deciding to change it, they'll be like, wait a second. They will correct you the minute you change something.
You did not say that last week.
That's right.
And then I'm always like, I can't even remember. I don't know what I
It's so true. So I started, and it sounds crazy, but I started writing down my choreography, and people look at me like, you do what? Because, you know, it's kind of hard to put every single little movement into a wording on paper, like short form. But I do that just for that reason, because it's a little bit easier to show movement. But if you're, you know, telling someone because they cannot see, for example, then you need to make sure you're stating the same thing over and over again, the same way, and
Yes.
not like using a different, you know, form of a word.
Yeah, that was something I never realized, the unique way that you have to speak when I first began working with visually impaired clients, that I was doing something but not doing the justice and explaining it verbally. And then I was like, oh my God, I need to like work on my words.
It has to be very thorough.
Yes, so much. Absolutely.
Yes. Something else that we work on, this is not really social emotional, but as far as physical, because it does tie into self-confidence and anxiety. You know, when they're already having issues with balance and weight bearing, so something else that we work on is body awareness and healthy habits and stretching. And if you can't stretch up to here, it's okay. And that, you know, so I insert a little bit of adaptive yoga into it, just to help with flexibility and range of motion. And so I'll say, like, you know, take a deep breath, and every time you exhale, you can stretch a little deeper. So then maybe 10 classes from now, you can actually reach that point that you want to get to.
Yeah.
Something I do as a recreation therapist with my clients is I've added mindfulness as something to attempt with them for a short period of time. And I'll try to incorporate that into the dance classes towards the end when we're trying to cool down and trying to calm them down afterwards, which is, you know, it's hard enough normally, but with this particular population, you know, you're getting them in, you're telling them to flex and stretch and then move and jump around. And then, oh, by the way, before you leave, you need to come.
It's like torture. Let's go crazy and now let's settle down. It's so hard. It is like that bell curve, you know, where it's like, okay, you come in, you kind of get worked up and then you get going. And then, but it's such a good life experience to learn too, of like, there's an appropriate time and space to be in that zone, but then you have to bring it down and exercise that ability to bring it down.
Yes. And I give breaks every 30 minutes, whatever type of class I'm doing. So if it's an hour class, I'll give one at 30 minutes. And I think it's gotten better because they know the routine. And now those breaks have went from 5 minutes to 2 minutes because they know what's going to happen next. And I think that also helps in everyday life too, if you know what's happening next and they're used to that.
Yeah, having that structure to rely on too just reduces so much anxiety. That's awesome. Huge. Yeah.
And I think music definitely plays a huge part with all of that too, you know, calming down and getting rid of anxiety. Mm-hmm. Personal space is also part of that. When you're trying to calm down and you need to be away from everyone, you know, laying down and, you know, not making eye contact and trying to be aware of what you're doing with your body. We use that to close the classes down usually.
Yeah. And that's like the, there's like mindfulness wrapped into that, like being in touch with your body, like relaxation. Like, I feel like it's all of those things culminating into one thing of, it's hard to do. Like I find that hard to do in yoga class at the end. I always enjoy that part, but I'm like, okay, I have to like stop thinking about there's nobody else here, like getting in that zone. And it's hard to do for sure.
It is very hard.
Yes. Mindfulness. Yes. It's awesome. Oh. So with your business, with Jasmine's Beat, what are some of your like bigger, you know, if you have like a passion project, long-term goals, where do you hope that it goes in the next, you know, 5-10 years?
So I'm trying to get more volunteers. I am actually currently, I guess, preparing for the next season to get some interns because I really should have done that from the very beginning, but I was kind of nervous about how fast this would pick up or if it would really be too slow for that. So it's been picking up because there's more places and therefore more groups that are, you know, asking for the class, which is nice. I would like to add a wheelchair specific adaptive class. Something I realized with the whole process of inclusion, so some, you know, some special needs students require, you know, one-on-one or small group sensory sensitive classes, which is primarily my typical class, just because that's what they prefer or need. And there's also others who want an inclusive class where it's a neurotypical class and they're just, you know, also welcome into it, which actually happens often in the particular studios that I've been in. Not sure where it hasn't been taking place, which I'm sure that also happens too, just because people can be nervous about it, whatever their reasoning is. And so the other thing that I kind of did not realize was as important, was that I had a client who was a teenager in a wheelchair, and she was looking for an adaptive dance class with teens in wheelchairs because she wanted to be relatable to someone else in a wheelchair, to someone else her age, who's similar interests or similar, you know, likes and dislikes. And that is not around in the community yet. So that is my next big thing. I would love to set that up. And then before I even do that, I just want to get myself trained. So there is a company called Danceability International, and they have some workshops that they do in Austin, and I'm going to go to that, get some feedback and bring that back and try to help get certified with me and whoever else wants to assist me. I do have an occupational therapist that does help me on occasion as my assistant. So, and then, yeah, if any internships, that would be great. Interns for rec therapy and some more wheelchair adaptive classes. And then, you know, wherever in the community you can, you know, try to be more inclusive in this population. I think it's starting to pick up in dance. I've been noticing more of that. Like, there's less stigma in the society right now as it is. So I feel like it's going down a better path than it was, say, when you and I were growing up.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So much more expansive. There's so many more opportunities for sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Those are really exciting directions. Like to, you know, like the internship is so, I think it's so exciting. Getting to supervise is always just like an amazing experience when you have eager interns who are excited to be there and they bring new ideas. That's awesome.
And recreation therapy, it was really new when I was getting into college. My parents are like, what is that?
Yep.
Like physical therapy, but not quite. Different. I mean, we all work towards similar goals, but in a different path, you know, a different modality every time. We have quite a few interventions available at our disposal. And you know, we could do multiple populations at the same time, which was, I thought, was the neatest thing about this field. And so the ability for me to use what I like doing the most and then combining it with the fact that, you know, I can continue my career further, what I set off doing first. I love that idea. So.
Yeah. And you guys are like a jack of all trades. It's like you get to kind of, you get to, you know, you can piece together what you need and what the clients need, but then like have your own depth in, you know, your own personal modality. It's so awesome.
Yeah. So I have worked in assisted living and nursing home facilities a while ago. It's quite a while ago, but so many of those experiences came rushing back into my head when I got the opportunity to work with the Dallas VA. And I just started remembering all the music and, you know, we call it reminiscence therapy, playing all the, you know, the older movies and the music and the types of dance that, you know, were used more often back then. So I actually am very excited to go back to that again, you know, for a little bit, because something that, you know, you won't know unless you're experiencing that with someone who loves that.
Yes. So,
yeah. And no matter how much you might, you know, enjoy it or hear it on, you know, on the fly, if you're actually with someone who truly enjoys it and, you know, respects that, you know, that's something to see, like on their face, their eyes gleaming up, you know, talking about old stories or what they did with, you know, their first dates or their wives or their prom dates, things like that.
Yes. It's so like, I feel like it's a really humbling experience when you get to be in those moments of like this person sharing this cool stuff with me, what they like, what they enjoy. And I think that, you know, as therapists, like that's the when we get to be with somebody when they're in that space, if it's a memory or if they're currently experiencing it in dance or music, it's like that shared experience is so powerful.
Yes, so much. And a lot of times, you know, especially, you know, in that older population, more often than not, they're widows. So missing their loved one and bringing back all these memories. So instead of being saddened by it, they're actually, you know, happy to think about it. These are happy memories, you know, that are, you know, being brought back, and they have someone to talk to about it. Like, we provide that space to, you know, go free. And I will never forget, I had, I want to say she was in her 90s. She was in a wheelchair and she was very quiet and she just went with the flow, but she didn't really ever speak up much about herself. And then we played some music and all of a sudden she started talking about her past and she started tapping her feet and tapping her fingernails on the table. And then that graduated to, like, you know, a couple weeks down the road, she'd be bopping her head side to side. So every time she listened to it more and more, something else, like more of her personality came out. And this is someone who suffered from dementia. So, you know, to, for her kids to see that come out in her, they were like, okay, what else can you do? What other events can we do where we can play this music? And one of the things that we did was put on a bridal gown show. There was a there was a bridal gown store that was willing to lend us some of their gowns.
Oh my god.
These ladies at the assisted living slash acute rehab place, we set up their cafeteria as a runway, and we played some of their favorite music, and they walked down and they were strutting their stuff. Where they, some of them had canes and they're trying to, like, shake their hips on the side while they're walking down.
Oh my gosh, that is so, what a cool idea, like, and yeah, such a fun thing.
You're not going to get that anywhere else, like that, it has to be like that particular experience, and yes. It brought back so many memories, and their families were invited to watch, and it's almost like, you know, as a parent going to watch your kids on stage in a, you know, for drama club, you know, like the amount of pride that they got seeing their parents or their grandparents doing that and being able to smile.
Yes. Just because
they remember things. So
totally. And coming out, especially when there's like dementia or Alzheimer's, it's like coming out of a locked room. Like, yeah. When they're finally able to come out and you can see that of like that, oh, that person is back. They're not, you know, locked away and just in their element. In a, I love that image in my mind so much.
But I truly believe, I remember working there, when I was working there, I was thinking, you know, and I saw some kind of meme or something about this where, you know, when you're a baby, you're getting taken care of. And as you get older, you kind of revert into needing to be taken care of again. And it's the same similar things that bring you to life. And, you know, what brings you your flow, your intrinsic motivation to do things, and it's what you know, deep down inside, what your passion is. So if you enjoyed certain music, or you enjoyed you know, exercise, or you enjoyed art, doing arts or arts and crafts, or painting, and some people was writing, they used to be a journalist, you know, other things like that would come up. And so when I'm doing this with the kids, with dance, a lot of times they are, you know, I don't want to say inhibited, but not given enough opportunity to come out. I'm not blaming the parents at all, not at all. I just think that people don't realize. And so they're like, you know, maybe this might be too much for them, or maybe I don't want to rock the boat and make them upset even more, or I think they might be too much for someone else. I don't think there's someone out there who would be willing to have the patience as much as we do, you know. And so providing these opportunities, you know, I always tell, you know, whoever comes, just try it. Even if it's just one class or 10 classes or the whole year, you know, it's something. And always come back later and be like, hey, you tried this the one time, do you want to try this again? And it'll always be a familiar face. familiar set of, you know, volunteers, familiar set of parents that are nearby, students that are nearby. So I think that's crucial to them. Like I said, they thrive on routine.
So. Yeah. And then knowing that that support system is there, and after a while having like, that's a solid support system, you know, yeah. Like the same faces, like I know the routine, I don't have to get up on stage, but maybe, you know, it just takes time. And I love what you said too, so much about just making sure that the opportunity is there. Like there's the times when I think as adults, we, you know, we can be like, oh, I don't know if it'll be successful. But yeah. It, as soon as you said that, it reminded me of a client that I had that loved to sing and, but had never gone on stage before. And there was a talent show and I was like, oh, I don't know. And, but I was like, you know what, let's go for it. I'll be there. She has other support systems. She got up on stage like it was nothing, no sweating. That she just walked right up there, did her thing. Like, dad was crying, parents were crying, and I was like, oh my gosh, had we not like just gone for it and made the opportunity with support there, we would have never known. And that is so important to, you know, give those opportunities.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think one of the things that I came across through my work before the dance company, I used to work at a children's rehab center in New Jersey, and it was a medical day center. So the patients would come in from 8 to 3, so like a typical school day, and they would go through school, like a school schedule, but in the process they would have all their therapies and we would work as a team. So as soon as they come in that first hour, because of the ages, they were more preschool age, we would have circle time, and I would be sitting next to a physical therapist, an occupational therapist, speech therapist, you know, the nurses, sometimes a psychologist would come in. And I loved that experience because it also tells me what else I can do towards, for example, the dance company that I have, because the other goals that are set in place that I might not think of right away. So for example, one of the things that I'm currently working on is figuring out how to provide choreography for clients who cannot cross midline with their arms or legs. Mm-hmm. It's just not possible. But how do you provide choreography that's, you know, movement enough to do that? So that is something that I'm currently working on.
Yeah, but that interdisciplinary approach is like, that's so, like when you have access to that, to, you know, have PT, OT, speech, having recreation therapy, music therapy, art, like when you can come together. And yes. I think just having those experiences, it makes you think of that, of like, okay, I know I need to access that, or here's my hurdle. Like, how do I get there? Maybe I call OT or something, or bring them in. And that interdisciplinary work is just so amazing and so fully supportive.
Yes, I love that. I mean, there's another children's hospital also that we did group sessions, meetings, I think they call it a community meetings. It was led by the psychologist, but everyone from every discipline was part of that. And all the patients were there to tell us about their week, anything, any grievances that they had, and how we could work together to solve the problem, which I love. And I hope I can start doing that with my dance company, if I can get feedback from everyone else. I'm always asking people, what else can I do? you know, I'm always trying to get prepared more. So then if I can bring in more interns, for example, that would be more brains to use to facilitate some extra, you know, classes or choreography or goals met. And something else I also do, because I'm a recreation therapist, I have the flexibility of being able to bring one or two of my clients into my class. And so I know what goals they're working on and what they could be working on outside of class at home, or if they want to practice what they were doing in the class at home. I know they're capable of doing that. Yes. Within a time frame that way too.
Yeah, that like it's like that generalization into other into many different settings.
Yes.
Ah, and I would imagine too in recreation therapy that if you know you get interns that it's like that hive mind, you know, where it's like this recreation therapist might be way into art and have this whole different thing to go on. And this other recreation therapist might be way into something totally different. And then kind of just like having that all blend together sounds like a beautiful place to be.
Yes, absolutely. It's so good to have, you know, a community of, you know, different minds, but going for the same route, the same path of, you know, we want to reach this goal or we want to get this client to do something better, be more open. So it's definitely helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when I feel like when there's like psychologists or the, I don't want to say non-creative fields, but, you know, physical therapy or doctors, or, you know, if you're in a rehab unit, if it's like a rehabilitation specialist, when they are on board with the creative aspects of therapy, then it's like, yes, you know, like, so yes. We can like just rainbows and unicorns. We can do so
absolutely
much.
Yes. Yeah. That backing, it's, some places it's harder to get than others,
yeah.
And I have definitely witnessed that. But I will say, once we get there, the support of the entire team, even a family member who's, you know, saying, okay, what else can we do? You know, how else can we engage, you know, my loved one to be part of your therapy or your dance class or whatever. It's huge because their word of mouth goes to the next professional. And it, you know, especially, I don't know, I'm not sure how it is for music therapists, but I know for my field, it, you know, some, I often hear that a lot of recreation therapists get burnt out and that they are not getting as much respect as they thought they would be getting. And, you know, they're fighting for what they do and who they are. And, you know, and of course, pay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. And then, you know, the whole, you know, whether or not you're a reimbursable service, things like that for insurance. So that's constantly been, I've been part of it. I've been witness to it. I've followed up on it.
Yeah.
It's still in our continuing ed.
Yes.
How to, you know, lobby for yourself and, marketing, that's something that I'm constantly working on because I myself am not an outgoing person. So, but like you said, you know, when you put, you know, you cover your face and you put on, you know, black light clothing, you get attention, right?
Yes.
You have no problem doing it. So I'm definitely using this experience as a, you know, recreation therapist and a dance teacher to get out of my comfort level and just do what needs to get done so we can get this going. So.
Yes, I love that. And there's so, I mean, so many important things of, you know, burnout. I think it is the same too in music therapy. I think it's like, I think the highest burnout rate is in the first 5 years actually in music therapy. And it's the same elements of you're constantly advocating for yourself. You're going to deal with people who are like, music therapy, what, you know, who don't, whatever. And the pay and depending on the state that you're in and it changes everywhere. And, but the, you know, when you're able to like see that change and make those things happen and continue to reach outside of your comfort zone, like so many great things do happen.
Yeah. And I recently was talking to someone and I had mentioned to them, you know, one of the biggest things that I feel most accomplished about all of this is when somebody says, oh, we need Jasmine, or we need a recreation therapist, or we need someone who knows how to adapt the choreography, or, you know, that, because we're trained in that, you know, there is not another field that can do that. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, when we can work together and vouch for each other, and that, you know, for a music therapist, I could not do that. That is not my forte. I know a little bit of piano, that's it. That to use that for therapeutic purposes and to play as well as you do with, you know, whatever musical instrument you use, that's huge. That's something that you can't get from anyone else. And that's the same thing here. We have, you know, experience, and, you know, we have to do internships, and we have to take exams, and we have to have continuing ed. And I don't think a lot of people realize what goes into maintaining your years and years of being a therapist.
Yeah, and the continuing ed, and you know, making sure you don't burn out, you know, putting that self-care piece into place, and then deciding where you do continuing ed to support, you know, I always get so overwhelmed. I'm like, there's so much to choose from, but it's like, okay, you have to, you know, where is it going to support your clients, and where is it going to support like your business? And it's really can be really overwhelming how much. And I think we all too, as creative arts therapists under that big umbrella, we have a passion tied into it too, like a really deep passion with an art form that is its whole nother thing that we have to tend to, which can be really hard.
Yes, it can.
yes. Oh man, yes.
That's a good thing that I'm trying not to be a type A personality while teaching.
Right. Yes. Well, I wonder if you could tell us before we wrap up, maybe some of your self-care, some of the things that have helped you stay motivated, or, you know, some of your self-care routines that have helped you stay away from burnout and continue your passion.
Something that I do is, well, there's continuing ed, which every time I go to a conference or speak to another therapist or recreation therapist or recreation therapy professor, if I learn something new or a new route to do it in, or, you know, a new way to do chair yoga, or, you know, how to adapt to patients who have anxiety, and using that towards what I do on a normal basis, I use that for myself, and then I get inspired by that, which I, every time I come back, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do this and this. I just write down like 5-star notes.
Yep.
And then something that I have started doing within the last couple of years is start taking something new to learn. So this year I signed up for a sign language class. So I'm going to learn some sign language so I can feel a little bit more confident if that opportunity ever presents to me about, you know, using that. Another way that I take care of myself is I make sure that I make time for my family. So my 3 kids, you know, if I'm at their school participating in whatever, the PTA, or I'm also a special and gifted ed rep for their school, so I'll look into that. So it's partially, I'm also partaking in their school and being present in their lives, but I'm also learning some things for myself because that's special and gifted ed. So I can take some of that information into my own business. I have read recently that whatever method that you use for self-care for your clients, you should not use it on yourself.
Ooh,
yeah.
Interesting.
That was a fairly recent finding of mine. And I have to agree, I didn't realize it until I read it. And then I was like, yeah, you know what? You're right. You can't use, you know, if you're using a certain type of meditation with your clients and use it on yourself because it's been overused, then, and you won't feel as you should using that.
That boundary isn't really there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I love that.
Something else that for me, I like to know that because I'm the one kind of running it and hiring and, you know, trying to do the choreography and changing it up, because I want to feel confident in myself, signing up for more adaptive dance certifications, or even just going for a regular dance class and making sure, like, okay, I still got rhythm. I've got it still.
I can do this. Because
it went away.
And I think, yeah, like our it's like feeding our own art form, you know, yeah. Of like, okay, no, I'm going to go, there's a million different certifications, you know, but it's like, maybe I should just go learn the banjo. It's been sitting there for 4 years. I should just go do it, you know, but like those are those, they pour back into ourselves. I feel like,
yeah,
yeah.
You can't, what was it? You can't pour
from an empty cup?
Yes, you can't pour from an empty cup.
Yes, yes. I physically think of that one sometimes. I'm like, how am I feeling on where I am today? I need more self-care.
Yeah, it's definitely helpful. I mean, yes. Also, you know, with doing, this is an active art, so a physically active art. So to be physically fit is pretty important. And so I've been trying to get on top of that in terms of self-care. I mean, it depends on what you're working on. I mean, if you like I can tell you from my son, I know that, you know, if he's doing something active and he's not hydrating enough, he can't focus. He can't, I'm witnessing it. And I'm like, I need to do the same for myself and provide the same care for everyone else. And mm-hmm. You know, with these type of dance classes, you can't just say it and expect them to do it. You have to physically do it alongside them, which is a lot more effort physically.
Yeah. Yes.
Even mentally, just to remember what you just did, make sure you don't mess it up or change it up, because they're going to catch you on that.
Write it down so I don't forget.
So there's a lot more steps to take with that class.
Yes. Yeah. And there's so much of your body that goes into it. Like even I am just getting over a sickness, and like my voice, I had no idea until I went into it of like how important hydration is, of like, make sure you're drinking tons of water. And then having chronic laryngitis like 4 years in a row, I was like, okay, I think, you know, I gotta take care of my body or else I can't do my job, you know? It's, I feel like something that does get missed on very active types of therapy, that you have to take care of stretching different muscles, because if you get tendonitis in your wrist, you can't play guitar or all those different things.
Yep. And it carries over to when the clients see you doing those, it's role modeling. It's, hey, you have a problem with your, you know, muscles being too tight, here, try this stretch. I recently tried it, you know, and that matters a little bit more too, when you use personal experience with them.
Yeah. And someone, this was like another quote that's like, don't pour from an empty cup or something. That's like, you can't, expect your clients to do something if you're not doing it for yourself.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's another good one. It's a hard one, but it's a good one. Well, Jasmine, I am wondering if you can let our listeners know if they have questions for you, if there's recreation therapy interns out there who want to contact you, where are some good places to find you and get in contact with you?
Okay. My website is www.jasminesbeat.com, all one word. And then I'm also on Facebook, Jasmine's Beat. I'm on Instagram as Jasmine's Beat. You can email me at jasminesbeat@gmail.com. And I am really quick to get back to you on that if you're interested in internships or volunteering.
Nice. Very cool. Well, this has been so wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
Yes, absolutely.
I hope that you guys enjoyed this episode and that you have some time to go check out all of the awesome stuff that Jasmine is doing. It's so exciting, the classes that she already has, and I cannot wait to hear more about what she's going to create in the future. So hopefully we will have her back on the podcast and we can get some updates on the really cool classes that she's going to create. Thank you guys so much for listening, and be creative.